You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome in to First Things First. I'm Sarah Kustak filling in for Jenna Wolf. That's Chris Canty. That's Chris Broussard filling in for Chris Carter. Nick Wright, ready for a good week, guys?
I am ready.
I'm ready to get after it. CB already and I had a huge conversation right with you before we even
came. I didn't want to tell what was happening.
So we're ready to go right now.
We're going to need to calm you guys down right out of the gate. But here we go.
No, we got to turn up. No turn down.
Right.
Turn
okay.
up. That's right.
All right.
Yeah, let's go.
It's All right, morning. Then let's turn it up. Here we go, because there's a lot to turn up on another day, and there is some more drama surrounding Raiders wide receiver Antonio Brown. Yesterday, Brown was not at Raiders training camp because he is reportedly still unhappy after the NFL rejected his preferred helmet for clearance in games. And it seems as though general manager Mike Mayock has had enough.
Here's the bottom line. He's upset about the helmet issue. We have supported that. We appreciate that. Okay, but we've, at this point, we've pretty much exhausted all avenues of relief. So from our perspective, it's time for him to be all in or all out, okay? So we're hoping he's back soon. We got 89 guys busting their tails. We are really excited about where this franchise is going, and we hope AB is going to be a big part of it starting week one against Denver.
All right, Canty, so what do you think? Do the Raiders regret dealing for AB?
I'm not going to say they regret dealing for him right now, but I will say that when somebody shows you who they are, you better believe them. And we found out exactly who Antonio Brown was last year in week 17, no show, no call, when his team was fighting to get into the playoffs, playing against a division rival, and you can't be there for your teammates. That's the part of it that I can't excuse. I can understand his frustration with the helmet issue. The helmet is the most important piece of equipment that any NFL player will wear. But that being said, you have to work with the league office and you have to work with your team to be able to find a reasonable solution that everybody can live with. And right now, it just doesn't feel like Antonio Brown is doing that. He didn't accept the decision from the independent arbiter when they took that case to that court a couple of weeks ago. And now it's a situation where it's starting to become contentious with the organization that gave him the guaranteed money that he was looking for in a contract extension. Keep in mind, that's an organization that he hadn't done anything for. Okay, they gave him that money. And so now I think it's in a situation where Mike Mayock and John Gruden are starting to become adversarial because of the timing of it. We're talking about kicking off the regular season in a couple of weeks, and he's not there. That part of it is inexcusable, in my opinion.
This is absolutely ridiculous. I mean, they have to regret it. I'm sorry. You said we saw who he was last year. We're seeing who he is now. They want to set a culture. Okay, you got a lot of young players on that team, on the offensive end and defensive end. Josh Jacobs, the running back. Hunter Renfrow, the receiver. You want to set the culture, a winning culture. If you don't handle this correctly, then you could lose that locker room. You could lose your chances of establishing a strong winning culture in Oakland, which is what they're trying to do. So I think Peter King from NBC Sports, he wrote a great article where he said that the Raiders need to send the dreaded, as he called it, five-day letter to Antonio Brown. Okay, what that means is that they send him and his agent, Drew Rosenhaus, a letter saying, if you're not here within 5 days and ready to practice and play, then we will put you on the reserve/left squad list, which means you cannot play for any team in the 2019 season. I think it's gotten to that point, Chris, because it's not only the helmet. There are the feet, okay? Then there are the reports that you're sitting in meetings, you've been late to meetings. Then there are reports that when you're in the meetings, you're on your phone or on a laptop and you're checking your bank account. Now, these are reports. If, you know, you're liking Instagram photos. Mm-hmm. This is ludicrous. And as you said, they gave up draft picks to get Antonio Brown. They actually, I think, look, they're in a tough division. I don't think they're going to make the playoffs. But I do think they are going into this season feeling like we have improved. We like our roster. And furthermore, for John Gruden, you have already traded away Khalil Mack, who not only was a great player, but was a great character guy. Mm-hmm. You've already traded away Amari Cooper, and now you bring in a headache, which is an understatement. You have got to set a tone, and I hate to say it this way, but put Antonio Brown in his place, and so that you can, you know, get your football team together for this season.
I hear what you're saying about the culture and trying to establish a new program, a new identity for this Raiders team. But I think that John Gruden and Mike Mayock bought Antonio Brown from Pittsburgh to answer the question of whether or not they got a quarterback. We're still trying to figure out whether Derek Carr is the guy, and I think that 2019 is that season. Keep in mind, after this year, there's not a lot of guaranteed money on Derek Carr's deal, so the organization theoretically could move on from him. But when you bring in a proven commodity like Antonio Brown, he helps you to answer that question. Think about some of the other moves that they made this offseason. You mentioned drafting Josh Jacobs out of Alabama with the first-round pick, Hunter Renfrow. They also went out and signed Trent Brown from the New England Patriots in free agency. They're starting to Tyrell Williams from the Chargers. They bought him in as well. They're putting pieces on that offensive side of the ball to try to figure out whether or not they got a quarterback. I think that's the question that they have to answer before they can go about the business of worrying about the culture that they're trying to put together for this team moving forward.
Because isn't this to be expected with Antonio Brown? I mean, you said it, when someone shows you who they are, you understand this is part of what you're getting along with the talent of Brown. So when AB, if he does get back on the field, could a lot of this be diminished given how he can produce and what he can do in his impact when he's actually playing?
Look, he's a great player, and Mayock and Gruden said this. Being in the media, they got to see him in practice. The reason they took the risk was because they saw how hard he worked in practice, which was as hard as any player they've ever seen. So I get that. When he gets on the field, and if he produces, a lot of this could be forgotten. But here's the thing. Pittsburgh didn't win the Super Bowl with him. And Pittsburgh, with all his production, was ready to move on from him. So I don't know that he's going to be worth the headache. And I agree with you on the Derek Carr situation. But if he's creating problems, and he did it with Ben Roethlisberger, it's going to still be hard to see where Carr is if you got a receiver with a bad attitude.
Yeah, if he's disgruntled and disruptive, it makes it a little bit tougher to evaluate everybody on the roster. I get exactly what you're saying. But, I mean, I think this was a risk that Mike Mayock and John Gruden had to take. We know what Antonio Brown is in terms of a personality, but we also know what he is in terms of production on the field. Now, the fact is, he ain't missed no games yet. It's a bad look. They're breaking training camp today. The other 89 guys, they've been working for the past month. It doesn't feel like AB has been doing much of anything rather than bumping his gums and talking about how disgruntled he is at the NFL. Now, to his defense, it feels like the NFL is moving the goal line a little bit on this helmet issue just because Antonio Brown did find one of the helmets that he's used to wearing, a model that was made within that 10-year window, and yet the NFL said that he's not going to be allowed to wear that one either. So when you look at the entire situation, there is a little bit of an issue in terms of the communication between the league office, the club, and Antonio Brown in terms of what the standard is for the helmet that he needs to wear in 2019.
Here's the thing, Chris. Over 2,000 players in the league, all of them have agreed to the helmet deal. Now, some of them didn't like it. You know, what was it, 32 other players last year playing their old helmets?
Yeah, 32 guys that were grandfathered in.
Right. Yeah. Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady, they don't necessarily like it, but they're doing it. Why can't Antonio Brown just do it?
He's going to end up doing it. That's going to end up happening. Antonio Brown is not crazy. There's still about $30 million in guaranteed money that's left out there. He's not going to leave that on the table because you're right. With the designation that the club that has the potential to put on him, the reserve left the squad designation, I mean, essentially, if he doesn't report in those 5 days after they notify him and his representation, they could actually void his contract, and that $30 million goes away.
He would lose
He's not crazy. He's not going to lose that money.
Should they send the letter?
Well, here's the thing. If you do send the letter, at that point, the relationship becomes contentious between Antonio Brown and the Raiders. And John Gruden
is not there yet?
Well, they've been trying to put a good face on it. John Gruden has come out in support of it, and AB acknowledges
it. Mayock, I agree with you, but Mayock came out yesterday pretty strong.
He did. We'll see what happens. I say he shows up.
How will this play out with Zeke and the Cowboys?
Look, I've been saying for more than a month, I think it's going to play out in that the Cowboys start the season without Zeke, because looking at the schedule, the Giants, who, you know, young defense, right? Mm-hmm. Washington, who we think is going to struggle. Miami, we think is going to struggle. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying it has to go three games. But what I'm saying is, if you're the Cowboys, I think you can afford to go into the regular season without Zeke, unless he comes in and accepts the Le'Veon Bell type money that's supposedly on the table.
Yeah.
And I think you can beat those teams, if not all three of them, certainly two of them, even without Zeke, especially with the way Tony Pollard is looking. So I think this gives the Cowboys a chance to see what Pollard and the running game looks like against the Giants. If you can, even if you beat them, but you can't run the ball, then I think you go to Zeke and say, all right, let's get you in here. Don't let the season drift away. But I think Jerry has said himself that the regular season is when you really get leverage, right? Yeah. He said on the part of the team, it could hurt the team or it could hurt the player. So the way Tony Pollard has looked, I think Dallas feels like we can go into the regular season and then see how we play without Zeke.
Well, here's the thing. When you look at the expectations for the 2019 Cowboys, I don't think you can run the risk of allowing the negotiations to bleed over into the regular season, because you can't afford to give any games away. You want to have your best team available week one going up against the New York Giants. Now, we think the Giants will be an average to below average group. I agree with you on that. But I can't afford to run the risk of losing a game, especially a division game, early in the season like that. For me, you got to have Ezekiel Elliott in the fold once you kick off the regular season. I understand Tony Pollard has showed well throughout the course of the preseason, but even looking at that game on Saturday night, CB, I mean, Tony Pollard early on that first possession for the Dallas Cowboys, he missed a blitz pickup, which forced a Dak Prescott sack. So, I mean, that's a situation where you can't afford to let your quarterback get hit because your running back doesn't know to pick up an outside linebacker off of the play action. That's something that you can't afford. Now, Tony Pollard made up for it on that drive. He had a nice 15-yard run for a first down shortly thereafter. And then, of course, he capped off the drive with a touchdown run. But Tony Pollard ain't Ezekiel Elliott. You're still talking about a guy that's led the league in rushing. Two out of the first 3 years he's been in the NFL. In 2016, he had 1,000 yards rushing on first down alone. Last year, he led the league in rushes of 10 yards or more. He led the league in rushes for first downs. So he allows your offense to stay on schedule. You can't afford not to have Zeke out there on the football field, because guess what? If you don't have Zeke, you're not going to get the best version of Dak Prescott, and you're not going to make the most of that offensive line, which is one of the highest paid offensive lines in the National Football League.
I think Ezekiel Elliott is the best running back in the league. I love him, but I do think, I hate to say it, I think running backs are replaceable. Le'Veon Bell, James Conner came in and played well. Look at how many undrafted rookies in seventh round and third round draft picks are coming out of nowhere. Now, I agree, Tony Pollard's not Zeke. My concern, you're right, he missed that block where Dak got sacked, but also he has not had anything near the workload that Ezekiel Elliott has had. He had 243 touches in his whole three-year career at Memphis. Mm-hmm. Zeke had more rushes than that just last season. So I share your concerns. However, if the offensive line is intact and Amari Cooper is there, I do think they can have success on the ground without Zeke. And if they don't, then I think you go back and get him. But I think you're in a position where even if they lose to the Giants and you're 0-1, I think you can survive that.
So let me ask you this, CB. What are the expectations for the Dallas Cowboys coming into 2019? To compete for a championship, right?
Yes.
Are they winning a championship without number 21? Probably
that
not.
Probably
when
not.
You look at the NFC.
But they probably don't win it with him either.
Well,
probably.
No, you can't say. Well, here's the thing. You got to give yourself the best chance to try to compete for a championship, and that's what Jerry Jones is looking for. I think this team has a 2 or 3 year window that they can keep the entire band together with all the contracts that they already have on the books. I think they have that opportunity to compete the next couple of seasons. Why would you want to give away one of those chances this year just because you're trying to play hardball with your best player?
So would you make him the highest paid running back in the league?
Yeah.
I
would make him the highest paid running back in the league, because when you look at the other two players that you're negotiating contracts with, I don't think either one of those guys are going to deserve their place in the market when they get those extensions. Ezekiel Elliott is arguably the best running back in the National Football League. You can't make that argument for Dak Prescott, and you can't make that argument for Amari Cooper.
Do you think it gets done by week one?
I think it gets done by week one because Zeke is the best player on that team. I mean, I just can't imagine Jerry Jones not getting this contract negotiated. Now, we do have the reports that Zeke was seen on a plane headed to the Dallas area over the weekend. So hopefully that's a good sign for the Dallas Cowboys. Maybe he's extending a little bit of good faith. But I think that Dallas with Jerry Jones and Stephen Jones, they got to get this contract worked out because this is a team that's going to need Ezekiel Elliott, especially when you start talking about competing against the upper echelon squads in the NFC. You look at the NFC North, there are three teams that could win that division. The NFC South, the same thing. And then, of course, you got the Seahawks and the Rams out west, and then you got the Philadelphia Eagles in the NFC East with you. So, I mean, there is a lot of competition. The NFC is stacked this year. It's not going to be a huge separation between these teams, but a player of the caliber of Ezekiel Elliott could be the difference in the Cowboys representing the NFC in the Super Bowl.
You've both touched on it. Dallas believes that they are a title contender. Right. Do you think that they can be if Ezekiel Elliott comes back?
I do think they're a title contender, and I do think they need him, but I think if you start the season playing well and Tony Pollard's playing pretty well without Zeke, then I think Zeke comes back and you get him at a better price. Because the Todd Gurley contract, that's what Zeke is using as, you know, a measuring stick. Mm-hmm. That's working against them, though, because it looks like now Gurley's damaged goods. And you have to pay him all that money afterwards. So, and even if Jerry, and I think he was correct when he said Tony Pollard can't replace Zeke, but he can compliment him. Even if he's looking at Pollard as getting a lot of touches, even with Zeke there, are they going to be willing to break the bank for Zeke? When you may be thinking in 2 or 3 years, Pollard's the number one guy over Zeke.
CB, I'm going to push back a little bit. You said the Todd Gurley contract could be working against Ezekiel Elliott. Now, on its face, it looks like a bad deal. Right. But do you think Jerry Jones would be willing to pay that money out to his running back if that meant the Dallas Cowboys got to the Super Bowl in that season? Because yes, that's exactly what happened to the Rams. They had an opportunity to compete for a championship. So, I mean, if you look at it from that perspective, it does make sense to get your best player back on this team as you're moving toward the regular season.
Any concern about the shape he'll come back in?
Nah, the reports are that Zeke is at his lightest weight right since he came into the league. He's around 220 pounds, so I don't have any concern. Look at it, the last couple, 2 years ago when he had that suspension where he was out for 6 games, he went down to Cabo at his agent's place, and he came back. He looked fantastic. So I anticipate we're going to see Ezekiel Elliott ready to go if and when he gets on that field for the Dallas Cowboys.
Moving on to the Lakers. After Boogie Cousins tore his ACL last week, the team is looking at potential replacement options, and they might have found one in former Lakers center Dwight Howard. LA was reportedly granted permission to speak with Howard by the Grizzlies. Chris Broussard, is it a sign of desperation that the Lakers are interested in Howard?
Look, I don't think the Lakers should be desperate at all. And I like Boogie Cousins. Obviously, he's a great individual talent. But I don't think their season was riding on Boogie Cousins. Mm-hmm. I mean, you got LeBron James, who we believe is going to come back with a vengeance. He's actually tweeted about it, right, that he's coming back with fire and all that stuff. What did he say, the throne? Too many people been sitting on the throne or something to that effect.
Yeah.
You got Anthony Davis, who, as great as he's been individually, still has a lot to prove as far as can you win basketball games. You know, you're in L.A. So, and then there's some other pretty good players around him. Avery Bradley, Danny Green, Kyle Kuzma, who I do think can be that third scorer, give you 18, 17 points a game. So I don't think it's desperation. And I talked to an executive who had Dwight Howard in the past few years, and Howard actually put up good numbers on paper for them. He couldn't get rid of Howard fast enough. Mm. He said it'd be a bad move by the Lakers to sign Dwight, but I'm going to disagree with him because I think it's a low-risk, potentially solid reward move. You pay him the vets minimum. He comes in. It's kind of like Carmelo Anthony in Houston. Mm-hmm. He comes in. If he acts up, if he doesn't fit in, whether it's because of his antics in the locker room, his personality, or just his game, for whatever reason, you can get rid of him. And it's no skin off your back. But if he comes in, he fits in, he's been humbled, he's, you know, he's fitting in with your culture in the locker room, then I think you can do it because he still can rebound. Mm-hmm. He can protect the rim. He's a big body. We know Anthony Davis doesn't want to play center.
Yep.
So he's a big body that can bang with those bigger centers in the West. So I think it's something you try, and if it doesn't work, you get rid of him within a week or two. But you keep him, and if it does work out, it could be paid dividends for you.
No, I'm right there with you. I think it's moderate risk, moderate reward. I agree in terms of what Dwight Howard could be if his mentality, if how he's perceiving himself and the role that he's going to be asked to play, if he accepts that. Like, when you look at this team, it's not going to be led by Dwight Howard. It's going to be led by LeBron James and Anthony Davis. As long as he understands that he's not that dude anymore, I think it makes some sense. Now, I don't love the fact that he's coming off of another back surgery and he had some hamstring issues last year, held into 9 games. But the year before that, when he was with the Hornets, he played in 81 games. He averaged 16 points and 12 boards. So, to your point, I think he can be a rebounder and he can be a presence in the paint, a rim protector, and he can allow your lineup to have some versatility, some flexibility, because, like you said, Anthony Davis doesn't want to play center all the time. So I think it does make some sense. But, again, it's going to come down to the personality and the overall fit in that locker room. We just don't have the answer to that question. But what we do know is he can't come in with the same attitude he had the first time he was with the Lakers.
But I think he's mature. I think he's 33 now. I think he's matured. I think he's been humbled. I think with all these different stops from back in 2012-13 when he was with the Lakers, I think that even when he's gone to the media and spoken about how he's learned from those experiences, I also think this Lakers team being a title contender, having LeBron James, not being the guy, having Anthony Davis, you can go down the list. There's a multitude of players that I think he respects, that he will respond to. The only issue, I mean, he played 9 games with Washington last year, so I do think just the health factor is something to look at. But more than anything, he can give you a double-double and a body bang with throughout the entire season. Anthony Davis may not want to play the five, and throughout the course of the regular season, they may not be putting him in that position. You better believe when postseason comes around, when push comes to shove, when they're going to need to win games, their best lineup is Anthony Davis at the five. And so Davis has been clear throughout his entire career that he has always preferred to play at that power forward spot. But I think more than anything, he could be Dwight Howard along, you know, side JaVale McGee, could be a stopper in that position until when they really need to put their best lineup on the floor. And that will have Anthony Davis
right
at the five.
And it's just more depth, you know. And again, it's low risk. If he acts up, I can't say it enough, get rid of him. It didn't affect Houston last year when they got rid of Melo.
No.
You know? And so you could do the same thing with Dwight. Give him a try.
But the one thing I will say about it, CB, you said the season is not going to hinge on Dwight Howard or any of those other guys. It's going to be LeBron James and Anthony Davis. I'll push back a little bit on that from the standpoint of, we know what LeBron James and Anthony Davis are when they're healthy. They're first team all NBA type of guys. They're top five players in this league. So I do think the Lakers season will come down to those complementary players, the guys that are going to be surrounding those guys. If they're able to get the most out of them, then I think you're talking about the Lakers being a true title contender. But if those other guys, if Kyle Kuzma, Danny Green, and others don't play well, the Lakers are going to have a hard time getting out of the West.
I agree with that. I just don't think Boogie was that guy.
Yeah.
They're going to need those other guys to shoot well and defend well. And Kuzma's got to be a legit three who can hit the three, a third option who can hit the three. But I don't think Boogie, like, for people that are, no, the Lakers are done now, Boogie's out, I don't get that thinking at all.
How good do you think I'm glad you brought that up and being a title contender, but how good do you think the Lakers can be this season?
Look, I think they could win it all. I'm not predicting them to win it all. I think the Clippers should be the favorite because I think the Clippers pieces fit together better. We saw Kawhi step into Toronto and even miss 20 games and fit in seamlessly. So I think they'll fit together. Proven coach and Doc Rivers, championship coach, great defensive team, great role players already around them. To your point, the Lakers have a lot more questions, but I do think the Lakers have the best duo in the league in Dwight and LeBron and Anthony Davis. I think Golden State will still be hanging around there too. And the West is tough. I'm not going to write off Houston,
the West is going to be tough.
Yeah, a lot of tough teams. Denver. Yeah. But I like the Lakers better than all but the Clippers.
Well, I'm a Lakers fan, so of course I'm rolling with them.
But I will
say this. Of the options that have been floated out there, Kenneth Faried, Joakim Noah, I probably lean more toward Dwight Howard than those other two guys.
Yeah, Joakim I think he doesn't have much left at
Well, the same questions about the health and Kenneth Faried, too. I think there's some of those same questions about maturity and how he will fit into the big picture of a team, so. We are back here with Brian Westbrook, and we're talking Patriots. Over the weekend, Josh Gordon, who played in 10 games with New England last season and had been suspended indefinitely for another violation of the NFL's substance abuse policy, was reinstated by the league and is eligible to play week one. So, Brian, does Gordon's reinstatement calm all concerns for the Pats receiving corps?
You know, unfortunately not. We know the talent that Josh Gordon is. But I think the two most important things in the NFL is availability and dependability. And unfortunately, Josh Gordon missed 2015, 2016, the entire season. He missed parts of 2014 and 2017. And his availability to that team, it just isn't there. You can't depend on him. And so every coach wants to know you're available. Injury, suspension, that you can at least show up. And you also want to know, are you dependable? Meaning the things that you did in practice, can I depend on you to do those same things every single week and in the games? And unfortunately with Josh Gordon, the Patriots appreciated the 40 catches and 720 yards and 3 touchdowns. They appreciate that. And to my opinion, this year, if they get that, that's a bonus. But you can't build a team around his talents. He's super, super talented when he's there. Unfortunately, because of his disease, because of his sicknesses, some of the issues that he's been through, you just can't build around that. He's just not available and dependable to a football team.
Well, here's the thing. I think that Josh Gordon is a special talent. When you look at the physical tools, there are very few wide receivers in the NFL that can rival what Josh Gordon is bringing to the table. But the only question is he going to be able to stay in the right headspace to make sure that he is available throughout the course of the regular season? That's the question that we don't have an answer to, and we won't have an answer to until the regular season kicks off. But in terms of what this Patriots offense is going to look like, we know that Bill Belichick is going to score points. This group has been in the top 10 in scoring the last several seasons, so we know that they're going to be productive in terms of being able to put points on the scoreboard. It's just a matter of what that looks like, and then overall, how good is this group going to be and how they stack up against the upper echelon teams in the AFC. When you think about the Steelers, when you think about the Chiefs, the Chargers, the Texans, those are the teams that are going to be your primary competition in terms of getting out of the AFC and getting back to a 4th straight Super Bowl. So I think that when you have Josh Gordon, that's just going to give Bill Belichick and Tom Brady more answers to the test. They're going to have more ways that they can attack you, exploit the mismatches that they have when they're going up against opposing defenses. So I think that Josh Gordon, if he's able to be available for him, is a fantastic get, because outside of Julian Edelman, you're not talking about having a lot of experienced wide receivers on that football team.
Yeah, I think, look, if Gordon, and it is a big question mark, and I'm sure the Patriots understand that they're proceeding with caution, and they're going to have to do that the entire year. It's not like you can get to week 9, oh, Josh has been great, and then relax. You know, you're going to have to hold your breath all year that he stays available. If he does, though, I think it's a huge help. And I don't have that many concerns about their receiving core on the outside. I think N'Keal Harry, the rookie, is going to be very good, especially if Gordon is there.
Yep.
And Edelman, you know, we know what he brings to the table once he gets healthy. Sony Michel, I think, is a good receiver out of the backfield. I do think the offense is going to look a lot different than what we've been used to, because I don't think they're going to rely on the tight ends as much as they have in the past. And I think they'll rely on the running game. But if the running game is strong, then I think that just opens things up even more for the receivers. So offensively, I think they'll be fine if these guys are available.
Do you think, I mean, is it safe to assume that New England would be the best but for him to be available, putting his locker next to Tom Brady's? Is this the situation where if he's going to thrive, it would be with the Patriots?
Well, I would think so, but I think Josh Gordon has to figure out this thing all to himself outside of the game. I mean, it's much bigger than the game for Josh Gordon. It's all about him coming to a place where he says, I don't want to be that anymore. I don't want to be the guy that's undependable, that people can't rely on me anymore. I don't want to be that guy. I want to be a guy that can live a stand-up, good life, whether I play football or not. So really, it's much bigger than the game for Josh Gordon. When I think about the offense, I think about they want to run the football. If you can throw out there a guy that's big, that's physical, that's fast, that helps your offense. That puts the defense at a disadvantage. Now you can dictate things. Now you can say, hey, well, we got 8 men in the box. We're trying to stop Sony Michel. We're going to throw the ball outside one-on-one to Josh Gordon, give him an opportunity. Defenses have to respect that. And so if you want to turn into a running team, which I think a lot of people believe the Patriots are going to be, having a big-time receiver outside, having him available, having him threaten defenses in ways that you have no other way to do, that's key for this offense.
Well, I think you brought up a great point about Josh Gordon and being able to put the substance abuse issues behind him and make sure that he gets his life back on track. I think being a part of the National Football League puts the structure in place to be able to help him do that. Right. You know, it's hard. Sometimes when you look at guys' situations, it's harder for them to get their lives together if they're away from football. When now that he's back in the fold with the New England Patriots, he's going to have a support staff around him. It gives him a better opportunity. We'll see if he can take advantage of it this time around. I got fingers crossed that he does do that. I'm rooting for Josh Gordon, not just in terms of the productivity on the field, but in terms of just getting his life together.
At this point of the year, where would you rank the Patriots in the AFC? And how much is that dependent on Josh Gordon?
I don't think, for me, obviously you miss Gronk, and obviously he faded a little bit towards the end of last year. But anytime you have Tom Brady and Bill Belichick together, they have to be top five. That's just a guarantee that they're top five in the AFC. Some would put them top three. I think there are a lot of young teams, Kansas City. I think the Texans come up. I think the Colts, if Andrew Luck ever gets healthy, they are a team that will contend. There are some younger teams that will push the Patriots. But right now, when you talk about Belichick and Tom Brady together coming off a Super Bowl, it's just hard not to put them in top two or three teams already.
Well, if you're talking about competing for championship, you got to be in the playoffs. The easiest way to do that is win your division.
Right.
The Patriots are going to roll out of bed and win the AFC East. I like what the Jets are doing, but they ain't there yet. So, I mean, you look at that. From that standpoint, they should be in the playoffs. The question is, are they going to be able to compete with the other teams once they get there? You brought up Kansas City. The Chargers is another one. The Steelers are always there. The Ravens. I mean, there's going to be some competition. There's a lot of young teams that are only getting better in that conference. I think in order to put yourself in a better position to do that, you got to make sure that you have some versatility with your offensive attack. And I think Josh Gordon does help them bring that to the table. They become a much more dynamic unit if they have number 10 out there on the field.
When the Patriots, you just mentioned, they will make the playoffs. They'll win the division. What they do better than anyone in the playoffs is they're not going to make any mistakes. They're going to take away what you do well. And then on top of all of those things, they're going to put you in a situation where you have to play to your weaknesses. What are the things you do worse? Those are the things they're going to attack. And the Patriots, they do it better. They game plan, they scheme, and they do it, and they run their game plan better than anyone in the NFL, especially in the playoffs.
Then assuming they get in the playoffs, assuming they win their division, if they didn't, short of an injury to Tom Brady, what would the slip-up be? Where is an area that you could see a weakness in this organization?
It's explosive plays downfield. Who's going to catch that 3rd and 10, that 3rd and 8, where Gronk was such a big and critical part? Who's going to be that guy that's going to say, listen, now is the time the defense is taking away everything else, but I know that I can win right away. Julian Edelman may be that guy. Tom Brady's going to have to find some big plays down the field. Having Flash Gordon, that would be huge. But they have to find someone else to take up the slack that Gronk left.
I think the only thing that would keep them out of the playoffs are injuries. Like if this receiving core we're talking about, which I think could be pretty good with the three guys we've mentioned, if Harry maybe isn't available, or if Gordon certainly has a slip up, or Edelman, you know, gets injured again, maybe Demaryius Thomas never comes back, then I think those are the things that could keep them from making the playoffs. Outside of that, there's no way they're not making the playoffs.
Yeah, if Tom Brady is healthy, they're going to make the playoffs.
Yeah.
I ain't worried about that. It's what they do when they get into the playoffs. And keep in mind that the Patriots struggle when they don't have a first-round bye in getting to the Super Bowl. So, I mean, it's not just about making sure you get to the playoffs. It's just about making sure that overall record is one of the two best in the conference.
All right, Brian, stay where you're at. Coming up, have the Cowboys found Zeke's replacement? That's next on First Things.
Well, you know running backs are expendable.
Always.
I know you don't want to hear it. I know you don't want to hear it.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.